This is the At The Money podcast, in which I discuss growth and investment strategies with leading startup entrepreneurs and venture capital investors. My name is Thomas Mensink. I'm CEO and early stage investor at Golden Egg Check. And today my guest is Paul Becker, co-founder and CEO of Recap. Recap offers tech companies with subscription models an alternative debt funding tailored to their business. In this episode, Paul explains how Recap uses technology and data to make investment decisions, what the advantages of non-dilutive funding, and how he sees the future of data-driven growth capital. This episode is made possible by the NVP, the Dutch Association for Venture Capital Firms.
Yeah, hello, I'm Paul. I'm one of the founders of Recap. I'm in fintech now for almost 10 years. Feels like a lot of time, actually. Working on Recap now for roughly 2.5 years. Before that, spent most of my time rather on the asset management, wealth management, investing side of things in fintech.
I think the website says you're a serial entrepreneur. So you've been a founder before, right? What did you do?
Yeah. I personally actually don't like that term of describing yourself as a serial entrepreneur. But again, I don't have control over the content of our website no more. So I actually started a company before that, actually two companies before that, but one of them is also a venture-backed. It's called Liquid. It's an online wealth management platform catering mainly towards mass affluent private investors. I think that's the right term.
Say again, mass affluent?
Mass affluent private investors. It's like the private banking term to describe people who have liquid assets above 100,000 euros, but not beyond like 5 million euros.
So rich, but not super rich.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And that company I started with my co-founders end of 2014 and did that for a couple of years. So that was kind of my first step into the startup and entrepreneurial world.
Okay, nice. And you started Recap in 2021, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we founded the company in April 2021. We started working on the idea mid of 2020, I would say. So roughly 9 months where we just bounced ideas. The hook initially was very much driven by a couple of commercial due diligence projects we supported on as consultants. So my co-founders and I.
As consultants, so you quit your previous startup to become a consultant?
Exactly. It was, let's say I didn't quit the company with the goal to become a consultant. That would be kind of a weird decision. But when we faded out of the company, we just decided to not directly jump into the next hype cycle, so to say, and thought it makes sense to look in a couple of different companies, couple of different industries. And that's how we ended up with doing some angel investments and running a couple of consulting projects. And one of these projects or a couple of these projects were actually commercial due diligence projects, meaning we supported investors on evaluating companies they want to invest in. And that was kind of the trigger point for Recap in the end. So we thought about building software that you can use to assess companies and then decide whether you should actually invest in these and also help the companies to understand how they should finance themselves. That was kind of the starting point. And then how it typically is in the early days, you have a lot of back and forth and think about how can you actually, can you do that? Does it make sense? What's like the entry point? And then in April 2021, we actually started Recap.
Hang on. So the first step was a tool, software to assess the quality of startups. In what way? And from an investment perspective, though?
Yeah, absolutely. So in very simple terms, the observation we had is quite simple. More and more company data is stored somewhere in cloud systems. And many of these systems have open APIs. And you can extract the data out of these tools. And by tools, I mean, for example, CRM tools, billing tools, but also bank accounts, for example, that you can access in Europe. for example, via PSD2 standards. For us, it was just a very obvious observation that this data is great and that you can actually run great analytics on that data and that you can use it to both make better investment decisions initially, but also to monitor companies. And that was what we were really excited about. And I mean, to cut the story short, but happy to dive deeper into it. In the end, we quickly realized it makes sense to add kind of a funding layer on top and kind of become the first customer of our software ourselves, in order to like get the first couple of companies on the platform and gather the first amount of data and actually showcase to other third-party investors that this technology is working and that you indeed, based on that, can actually come to proper investment decisions so that at a later point in time, we can monetize the technology standalone. That's pretty much, in a nutshell, the approach that we decided to stick to back then.
Yeah, very interesting. And maybe it's now the right moment to kind of introduce what Recap is doing, because we know now that you use technology to assess startups and monitor them, and something with the fintech part, right? So maybe this is the moment to reveal everything at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. So the way we would describe Recap is kind of a vertically integrated financing marketplace. And that means in the end, we facilitate financing transactions currently focused on the debt side of things between investors and borrowers. And the vertical integration in that context basically means it's not only about the transaction itself, but actually a lot about the decision that leads to that transaction and the execution of the transaction, the monitoring that comes thereafter. And for that, we've built a lot of software. And most importantly, we directly integrate with the tools of companies to run all these processes as automated as possible and as data-driven as possible. And to be very specific, maybe also relevant for your audience, so the product that in the end, a company gets from our side on the platform is very similar to a revolving line of credit. That means when a company goes through the onboarding and connects its data sources, it then from us gets like a recommendation how it should finance itself in order to reach the goals that could be, for example, I want to become profitable in the next 2 years or so, but I don't have sufficient cash, then we will automatically come up with a model that illustrates how much liquidity you actually need. Should it come from debt sources or equity sources? And how can you actually use Recap to get to your goals? So it's a very flexible, very software-led, so to say, funding product.
And the focus of Recap is on recurring SaaS models, right?
Exactly. That's kind of our wedge into the market. So again, the way I described how we operate, it should get very clear that getting access to data of companies is very crucial for us. And again, my thesis is that in a couple of years from now, every company data will be somewhere stored in a cloud system, but we are not yet there. There are certain sectors that are, let's say, more mature in that regard, and others maybe not so much. And our observation was very clear that tech heavy companies, software companies, SaaS companies rather have a high likelihood of having a good data infrastructure in place that we can integrate with. That was very important for us from a go-to-market perspective, which is why we are very focused on SaaS companies at the moment. But this model in general is not limited to that. So we also work with more traditional companies. We just try to focus a lot on the ones that have a good data hygiene and a good data infrastructure that we can integrate with.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I was just wondering, you entered the market in 2021. This is like the top of the equity market, right? So a lot of VCs, large VCs in that year that invested a lot of money. Why do you think at that moment in time that adding debt funding to the market was a good idea?
Yeah, so how I think about it is actually not that much about when the right time is to add debt to a specific sector. I just think in general, it always makes sense to have a diversified capital structure. And I guess what you're kind of referring to is that many software companies, especially in the earlier stages, are purely equity financed. And that's something I can definitely confirm. We did research on that. The reason for that is that for traditional lenders, it's simply not that easy to price the risk of these types of companies. And even if they can, they have quite manual processes. And then it doesn't make sense to, I don't know, for example, run like a 3 to 4 week due diligence on a company and then in the end up with a loan of 500,000 euros or so. It doesn't make sense from a unit economic perspective for a traditional bank, for example. And that was obviously something we also knew back then and thought, okay, it's an interesting sector to be focused on given they lack access to debt. But again, coming back to the point I made earlier, I think in general, it's not you should go for debt instead of equity or the other way around, I think. And you can see that with large, more mature companies. It always depends on your overall financing strategy, what you want to do, how you should also refinance your company. And I think there is room for both debt and equity. And every company that has currently just access to one of these or to none should or deserves to get access to both. And that's also what we are working on.
Yeah. And do you feel like you have to educate the market a bit as well? Because I think equity is always kind of the go-to instrument for a lot of startups. And maybe because they are not aware that there are debt options for them as well. And maybe because there are no debt options for them as well.
I definitely think we need to educate the market. But I must also say it got a lot better over the course of the last 2 years. I think also driven just in general by companies like ourselves who are actively promoting these products and try to educate the market as much as possible. But again, to be specific, the average company that is using our platform has around 5 million in annual revenue. Mm-hmm. So those are no super, super early stage companies, but also no companies that have like decades on the market or so. And many of them actually don't have a CFO, for example. And there is just no finance professional on board. And this is not a bad thing in general, but we were more than once actually in a situation where we needed to explain what the difference between debt and equity actually is, and even need to explain once somebody realizes, okay, there's interest you need to pay on debt, and say like, yeah, but equity is for free, right? which is not, if you then just look at it and explain, yeah, you sell a part of your company and the payday will be sometime in the future when you may exit the company, and then you see how little you've left of it. So there are definitely a lot of basic discussions about what you should use which source of capital for, but also to when you kind of fast forward a little bit in the future, it's not for everyone so easy to understand how to think about that when you've just used equity up until this point in time, because equity feels to many a lot easier. Like you raise a certain amount of capital, then you have it, and then you are good to go, and you jump back into your operational challenges. And for debt, it's sometimes a little bit more complicated. Then you may decide, okay, I also want to raise a lot of debt right now and want to only pay interest on it. But then suddenly you realize, why should you raise 2 million at once if you don't put it to work immediately?
Yeah.
If you have 2 million euros on your bank account just sitting around and you pay interest on it, it's just not a smart usage of debt, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And this again is then the next more detailed level of education that you run through, where you need to explain to a founder who in the past always believed, oh, I need to raise a big amount of cash at good terms right now, and then I'm good to go. That's like how everybody is basically working. And then you tell them the opposite, like, look, you don't want to raise a lot of debt right now. You only want to raise as much as you can use right now. And that to some is very counterintuitive, so to say. So yeah.
And that's, I think, because I spoke to your colleague Christian Lücke, the CCO, and he told me that you're moving from a more transactional relationship to a more long-term partnership with your customers. I think that's in this regard, right? Can you explain how that works?
Absolutely. So again, when we launched initially, we actually had the assumption everybody will get it. They will just look at it like, ah, this is flexible, cheap capital. Great. Why should I not use it? The reality was slightly different. Many looked at it like, how should I use it? How can such a flexible product that is also based on the real-time data that I share, adjusting its price on a daily basis, how should I know what I can actually expect from you in the future? So it was quite the opposite. We thought we are flexible. Everybody can just use it when they want and they will be happy. And the initial reception was more like, okay, this is cool, but I don't really know how to get started with it. And the little trick that we then over time learned that we need to do is to go a little bit deeper in the value chain and guide companies basically a little bit longer and explain to them how should they, based on their financial forecast, actually use our product in order to reach their goals. And what then is typically the result after an onboarding process that a company goes through is just a funding plan. That's pretty much it. And that funding plan can be just for a year. Mm-hmm. It can be for 5 years. And that's the difference. So we kind of educate, if you want, or help customers to get the maximum out of our product, which, again, initially we thought we don't need to do it. And it also seemed counterintuitive if we need to explain so much about our product, is it maybe a bad product? but then again, if you look to many other B2B SaaS companies who target large enterprises or who sell mission-critical solutions in the end, they always have like a solutions architect or a technical sales engineer or whatever in the process that helps you get the maximum out of the solution. And that's a little bit the analogy you can also use when thinking about how we help companies to get the maximum out of the funding solution.
Yeah, it makes sense that maybe it's also a bit of choice stress or so, right, from the companies, that if you have so many options you can pick or so many flexibility that you can offer that you just don't know where to start.
Yeah, that for sure. But we should also not forget that this is just a very important decision. I mean, if you make a bad decision with regards to funding your company, you can pay with the existence of your company, right? And this is what many founders and CFOs, of course, know, and they don't want to do a bad decision in the end. And that was also something that was quite tough for us in the beginning when we didn't have any customers and nobody who could be used as a reference and illustrate, look, in that case, it has worked well. That's obviously quite tough. But fast forward to today, where we have a bunch of customers on the platform, and again, the market feels to be a little bit more educated. It's less of a challenge. But yeah, again, coming up with these funding plans helps us a lot.
Yeah. And you started in Germany, and now you're also active on the Dutch market. Why did you pick the Dutch market as the second market? And also, do you see any big differences between the two?
I mean, for me personally, I just like the Netherlands. Obviously, this was not the only deciding factor. I think maybe to answer the question a little bit different, why did we actually add another country? And secondly, I will answer why we decided Netherlands. For us, it was not that much about expansion back then. So we were not focused on growing the market we can address. For us, it was more a product market fit experiment, because we before that only worked with German companies. And as a German, I know that Germans can sometimes be a little bit special when it comes to finances. And we just wanted to make sure to have like another reference group of other founders who maybe have a completely different view. And in fact, fast forward to the decision to go for Netherlands, I can confirm that the ecosystem, the Dutch ecosystem, is slightly different, and that banks, for example, are more active. And I would say the
more
average,
active.
yeah, than in Germany. And I would, for example, say that the average Dutch founder is more financially literate than the average German founder. It's not like a complete difference, like they are living in different centuries or so. But on average, you see a slight difference. And that was the main reason why we thought we need to add like another country to have a little bit more exposure to other types of customers. And that we then decided for the Netherlands, I would say the two main reasons were how easy it is to access the market, especially from a regulatory standpoint. And in that regard, the Netherlands is relatively easy. And the other bit is how large the market is. And compared to the size of the overall economy, based on our research, there are actually quite a lot of tech companies in Netherlands. And that's why we then thought, okay, that's like a good mix. Let's do it.
Okay. And are you happy with that decision still?
100%. I think, of course, I don't have the latest numbers, but the vast majority of companies on our platform are still from Germany. And I think around 20% are Dutch companies. So there is still way to go, but we definitely learned a lot. I also, as I said, really appreciate that that on average, people are more financially literate and we can also learn from that. And I also just like the straightforward mentality, so to say. It's really like we get good feedback and people directly say how they think about it. And I just think so far it was the right decision, and we feel like our Dutch friends are very open for the services that we have to offer. And this is obviously a great result for us.
Yeah, cool. Good to hear. Can you also explain me a little bit more about how your business model works? Because in the end, you are providing debt, right? And collecting some interest out of that, I guess. But please tell me how you make your money then.
Yeah. So again, the way how you can think about our model is pretty much like a marketplace. So we see ourselves not as the debt provider ourselves. This is, of course, how customers on the borrowing side experience it and how they engage with our platform. But ultimately, the liquidity is not coming from Recap, but there is like a second part where we address investors that have liquidity and want to deploy it into this kind of asset class that we make available.
And these are the traditional banks, for example. Or...
Exactly. Exactly. Ah, okay. Who, as I said earlier, in many cases, just don't have the infrastructure or the willingness to handle each of these relatively small companies from their perspective on their own on a transaction by transaction basis. And they use our platform so they can actually invest like in a portfolio of these companies. And now coming back to your question, how do we earn money with that? It's pretty much just like a service fee or a take rate that we get on the whole volume that is flowing over our platform. That's how we make money.
That's interesting because I didn't know about this. And for me, the question is always, if you invest in startups or scale-ups, then you invest because you believe in the upside potential. But if you lend them money, then the best thing that could happen is that you get your money back with a little bit of interest, right? So there's not really an upside there.
It kind of depends. I would obviously argue that from a risk perspective, this is actually quite attractive, because in the end, I don't need to care whether a company will become a unicorn and have like a multi-billion whatever exit. I just need to make sure that I have confidence in their repayment capacity.
Yes.
And there are not that many options that a company typically has. Either it will become profitable, and at a certain point in time, the free cash flow will be sufficient to repay the outstanding debt. That's one option. And the other is there will be either an exit or another equity round that can be used or which proceeds can be used to repay outstanding debt. That's in very simple terms. Obviously, it's a bit more complicated, and this is kind of the magical part of our model, to use raw data to come up with the recommendation of whether it's likely that this company will be able to repay in the future or not. But again, I think just following that thinking, especially if you're, for example, an angel investor and you invest in a company that has not made a single cent so far, has no product, and you speculate 10 years in the future, they may be able to get to a great exit. That's a lot more like betting on success than when we, for example, come in and the company has a couple of hundreds of customers, and they tell us, look, this is my plan, this is my historical performance, and I think I can get to profitability in the next 2 years. I think everyone can follow that. If you know how to process the data, you can actually come up with a statistically valid, let's say, assessment of whether the company will be able to do that or not. And that's kind of how we think about it. But again, in the traditional world, these kind of analysis is done manually. Yeah. And for us, it's not. And that's why we are happy if in the end, a company just needs 500K or so. It's okay for us and it doesn't ruin our unit economics.
No, exactly. The model still works and the risk-reward balance is slightly different probably than from an angel or VC perspective. But it makes sense, yeah. Yeah,
100%. But you're also right. The upside is obviously a little bit more limited. But that's also why we don't. I don't know. I mean, not sure what your benchmarks are for that. But as far as I know, most angel investors always say, like, if you don't do like at least 10 to 20 investments, just let it be, at least from a financial performance perspective. And this is obviously not how we need to think about it. Like, I don't know, 9 out of 10 companies will fail. If that would be like the outcome of our lending performance, then we would be really in hot water.
Yeah, I get it. My next question was actually, and I think you've already answered it, but still, do you consider Recap a technology company or an investment company? Because at first I wasn't sure, but now I think I'm a bit more sure. But please tell me what you think.
I think in the end it's both, but one leads to another. So again, how we got going with this, to repeat it briefly, was really just that observation of data availability and that you can use it to make better assessments. And that's what we are excited about and where we think you can build a huge company that can just change how any company in the world will be financed and how investors make decisions. And that's what we are after. The question is just how do you get there? And you can't build up such a marketplace, such a data platform without getting like the first bit of data and having some kind of validation around your approach. And that's why we think going a little bit deeper into the funding side definitely is a necessity. You can't do it without that. And the beauty is also that over time, both parts, if we do it correctly, actually get closer to each other step by step. Even today, I mean, what is the difference in the end? If you look at our business model, if we charge a service fee for transactions that are done using a Recap funding product compared to if a third-party investor is just licensing part of our software to facilitate his or her own funding products. In the end, we just get a service fee, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how we think about it. But yeah, I would say from our heart, we are techies, and 60% of our team is product and engineering, and around 10 to 15% are in the finance area. So that kind of illustrates how we built this up.
I still think that a lot of, let's say, the traditional VCs, and maybe I'm curious if you experience the same thing, they will say, will this ever work for startups? Because the data quality is always, well, tricky sometimes. And a lot of VCs put a lot of attention or weight on the team. And you don't seem to include the team in your assessment. And I think it makes sense from your perspective. But do you have to argue with a lot of VCs all the time about what's the best approach to assess, you know, maybe the potential or the goals of the company?
So again, I think that's a question you need to look at from different points in time, where we are right now and how the world looks like in 10 or 20 years from now. And I think there are certain data points that may be more qualitative and others are more quantitative. And for some, it will take longer until you can just pull data out of a certain system to get an answer on the question you have in mind. But ultimately, our belief is for sure that more and more of this will be able to be answered following a quantitative approach. at this current point in time, the way we position the analysis that our platform is delivering is more an enhancement of a decision. It doesn't mean like the machine is saying yes or no, and then we do exactly that. It's more like it's delivering all the insights where you typically would have like a group of analysts sitting down for a week straight, and we have it just on a click. And then somebody is still having a look at it and making a sanity check. Yeah. And this is where you can also add some qualitative aspects to it.
Yeah.
And we think that this is appropriate for where the market currently is. But obviously, this will change over time. And again, this is like a thesis you need to buy in and believe in. I personally bought myself into this like more than 3 years ago, and I'm 100% bullish on this. But I completely appreciate that not everyone believes in that. But then my question would be, what's like their counter version of alternative version of how the future looks like? Do we really believe that investment decisions will be made like they are currently made forever? I think that would be, to some extent, a very sad outlook. And I think there is a lot of innovation in that space possible. And it's also just time for innovation in that space.
Yeah, I fully agree. How do you see then that future 10, 20 years ahead? What will be the role of artificial intelligence in that? And I mean, will it be fully automated that companies just raise money with some clicks, and well, maybe the companies will even be run automatically? Where's the human in the loop now?
Yeah, that's always an exciting question, and maybe also a little bit scary. I think it kind of, sticking to financing transactions, I think I'm not in the position to answer what every single person will do in the future with private matters and so on. But sticking to financing, I think what we can even see today is that for a certain type of transactions, a very high degree of automation is already reality, right? The only reason why we, for example, don't do like 100% automated process at the moment is because of the financing amount relative to the company size. So we finance relatively big tickets with regards to the company size. And we think for that kind of very important and, let's say, complicated decision, technology is not yet at a point where you should fully automate that. And also from a business perspective, it's not a necessity, because the unit economics allow for, I don't know, an investment of 1 hour of human labor into a financing transaction where you will earn a lot of money with. So we have kind of a pragmatic view on how to best approach that. But fast forward 10, 20 years in the future, I'm pretty sure that the degree of automation will go up. I'm 100% convinced that all the manual processing of data, like you need to keep in mind, the reality for banks and certain funds is still like they are getting spreadsheets, and they copy paste values out of one sheet in another into a system or so. That's the reality. So it's a lot more basic problems than you could assume people currently face when you read too much of AI news. The problems are very basic, and I think this will all be gone, and the decision making to a large extent will also be automated for sure.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah, maybe Paul, it's time for the final question, and that's your advice. So what would be your advice to founders that currently are or in the near future will be fundraising? What's your you have different angles, I think, so that's interesting. But what would be your advice?
Yeah, I mean, what I always tell founders and CEOs is obviously to know all the options you have, and that can be, among others, also debt and not just equity. Can also be government grants or similar stuff. There are many great options you can look after, and it's not always the smartest thing to just go for another round of equity, or not only for a round of equity.
Yeah, because you can combine it, right? That's the whole trick.
You can combine it. Yeah. Exactly, that's the trick. So that's like the most obvious piece of advice that I would give out to everyone. In the end, let's be real, for innovative cash burning early stage companies, equity is still like the anchor stone you need to look after. And if you are fundraising for an equity round at the moment, I think it's just important to bring some endurance to the table and to accept that the market goes up and down, and maybe currently it's a little bit tougher as a founder to raise funds than it was, I don't know, 3 years ago or so. But that's part of the game, and we are in the end all in for the long haul, and it's okay to fight a little bit. So I would never give up too early if you experience some pushback. That's part of the game.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the At The Money podcast by Golden Egg Chip. We can help startups to connect with the most relevant investors, and we can join the round with our co-investment funds. If you'd like to know more, have a look at goldeneggcheck.com.